So imagine walking into this brand new, ultra-modern house.
Okay.
And it is absolutely immaculate. I mean, the architectural angles are mathematically perfect. The paint is entirely flawless. The color temperature of the lighting is optimally balanced for the human eye.
Right, like a rendering.
Exactly like a rendering. But as you walk through the hallway, something just feels off. There are no, faint scratches on the floorboards from a heavy armchair being dragged across the room.
Dust.
Yeah, no dust, no slightly crooked picture frames, no fingerprints on the door frames. It's visually stunning, but it feels completely empty. It lacks the messy, unmistakable residue of human life.
Because it's sterile. I mean, it is an aesthetic marvel, but your brain rejects it. We are fundamentally wired to search for a sign of a human hand.
Right.
We want some evidence of friction or mistake or just an eccentric choice. When we only see mathematical perfection, it reads as a void.
And that tension between mathematically perfect output and genuine, messy human quirk that is the beating heart of our deep dive today. Welcome in, everyone. It's a Sunday, April 12, 2026.
A great day for a deep dive.
It really is. We are unpacking a really dense, just brilliant stack of updates curated from the AirArt Daily Newsletter. And we put this together specifically for you, the listener, to help map out the rapidly shifting landscape of digital creation right now.
Because it is shifting fast.
So fast. The goal today isn't just to list a bunch of new software. We're looking at a bigger question. In 2026, as generative tools possess this overwhelming amount of raw computational power, how are creators balancing that power with genuine human identity and craft?
The sources we have today cover an incredibly wide spectrum of how people are trying to do that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going from complex node-based video generation workflows and European AI sovereignty all the way to emergent subway jazz and this rising counter movement of non-AI tools.
It's a huge stack, so let's just jump right in. Where are we starting?
The first source in today's stack tackles this whole friction thing from a philosophical angle, and it frames the problem perfectly. It's an essay from Hacker News titled "Bring Back Idiomatic Design."
Idiomatic design.
Yeah. The author argues that the flood of highly capable AI-generated visuals is quietly homogenizing the visual identity of software and digital products.
They use that term, idiomatic design, which it is such a great way to describe it. It's that culturally rooted, highly specific visual syntax that gives a brand or an interface its weird, unique soul.
Right, it's the design equivalent of a local dialect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the architecture of modern AI models actively works against that local dialect, right?
It does. If you think about how these models are trained absorbing vast data sets containing billions of images, their core function is to find patterns.
Averages.
Yes. During generation, their loss functions are literally designed to minimize outliers. They mathematically shave off the weirdness to find the most acceptable, polished average.
Which is why everything kind of looks the same.
Precisely. The output is technically stunning, but it regresses to the mean. It lacks that idiomatic edge because, well, it's designed to please everyone, everywhere.
This instantly reminds me of the gentrification of the physical internet a few years back.
Oh, the coffee shop aesthetic.
Yes. You could walk into a trendy coffee shop in Brooklyn and
Yeah.
fly to London and then fly to Tokyo, and literally every single shop had adopted the exact same exposed brick walls, the same reclaimed wood tables,
That's
and
the same vintage Edison bulbs.
the Edison bulb hanging from the ceiling. It felt safe, it looked great on Instagram, but the local flavor was completely scrubbed away.
Right, a global aesthetic homogenization. And we are seeing the digital equivalent of those Edison bulbs right now.
Because it's just too easy.
Exactly, because generating a perfectly acceptable glossy asset takes like 4 seconds now. There is a massive disincentive to spend 3 weeks developing a bespoke visual language. The essay points out that we are sacrificing friction and distinctiveness purely for the sake of convenience.
But designers and filmmakers, they aren't just rolling over and accepting the generic output.
No, not at all.
To fight that regression to the mean, they are completely changing how they interact with the software, which takes us away from the philosophical danger of AI art and straight into the highly technical reality of the professional stack today.
Right, because the gimmick phase of prompting is undeniably over.
Totally over.
The PC Mag roundup in our stack covering the Best AI Video Generators of 2026 shows that real filmmakers demand absolute granular control. You just cannot get that from a simple
All right,
textbook.
make a cool video, doesn't cut it for professional production.
Exactly. So to achieve that control, the entire professional ecosystem has migrated to node-based architectures, primarily inside Comfy UI.
Now, for you listening, if you have never used node-based software, imagine like a modular synthesizer or even just a complex guitar pedal board.
That's a great analogy.
Instead of painting on a canvas, you are dropping little functional boxes onto your screen. These are the nodes. And you physically draw digital wires to connect the output of one box to the input of another, dictating exactly how the data flows.
It is literal system engineering. The Shacker AI guide in our notes breaks down how complex this has actually become.
Give me an example. Let's say I want to make a video.
Okay, let's say you want to generate a short, specific video clip. You don't just type man walking in rain anymore. You build a pipeline. You might use a Flux Model node to generate the base image.
Okay, step one.
Right, but to ensure the composition is exact, you wire in a ControlNet node to force the model to adhere to a specific depth map.
The locking in the physical space.
Yes. Then you take the latent output of that image and pipe it into a completely different model, like Stable Video Diffusion, to actually animate it.
And people have to build these from scratch because the comfy.org official workflow templates are in the stack today. And honestly, reading about it, it sounded like without them, people were losing their minds.
Oh, they absolutely were. Because you have to configure the motion bucket IDs, set the augmentation levels, and route the signal through a VAE decoder just to get pixels to show up on your screen.
It sounds like a nightmare.
The templates give you a pre-wired starting point, but even with a template, you are looking at a screen that basically resembles a commercial wiring diagram.
Because you're manipulating the latent space directly.
Exactly. You have to understand how a sampler interprets noise and how many steps it takes to denoise an image without, deep frying the contrast.
Okay, I have to push back on something here. I want to push back on this massive convenience narrative we have been sold by tech companies for the last 4 years.
Go for it.
We were told AI was going to remove the labor from art. It was going to do it all for us. But looking at these massive Comfy UI pipelines, it seems like creators are spending hours wiring up complex logic gates. Have we actually saved any time, or did we just completely change the type of labor artists are forced to do?
That is the big question, right? That completely flips the premise of generative ease. You are hitting on a crucial shift in the creative economy.
The labor didn't disappear.
The labor did not disappear, it relocated. We traded the physical, tactile friction of a camera lens or a paintbrush for the intense cognitive friction of system architecture. The 2026 professional artist is effectively a data pipeline manager.
Wow.
They are spending their time constructing the engine rather than painting the chassis.
Which requires an immense amount of computational power to run.
Yeah.
You're managing data flow, but that data physically lives somewhere on massive server
It's
racks.
highly resource intensive.
So if the labor has shifted to system engineering, we have to look at who actually owns the systems. The ArtArt Daily Stack includes a fascinating Hacker News piece on Mistral launching a European AI playbook.
Yeah, this is where the geopolitics come in. Mistral is making an aggressive push to position Europe as a sovereign AI force, and the creative ecosystem is a foundational pillar of that strategy.
But why? Why does a country or a continent care so much about hosting its own image generation models?
It comes down to structural bias, because the model is essentially a mirror of its training data.
Okay, right.
If all the dominant video and image models are trained by companies sitting in Silicon Valley, those models inherently carry a very specific West Coast American cultural bias.
Oh, interesting. So their baseline understanding of like a suburb.
It looks like Palo Alto.
Right, or street food or professional attire. It's all filtered through an American lens.
Therefore, AI sovereignty is not just an economic play, it is cultural preservation. Mistral's playbook is designed to ensure that the digital infrastructure of the future natively understands European architecture, European history, and that idiomatic design we talked about.
Without having to translate it through an American algorithm first.
Exactly.
But contrast that massive geopolitical infrastructure war with the other piece in our stack. CraftGeek's top 15 AI and digital tools for painters in 2026.
a completely different vibe.
Totally. This article is all about extreme, everyday accessibility. It points hobbyists to cloud-based tools, Canva, web versions of Stable Diffusion where you don't need to know what a VAE decoder is.
And you don't need a $3,000 GPU sitting on your desk.
Right. Anyone with a web browser can log in and generate.
It's the ultimate democratization of the front end, but it is subsidized by those massive sovereign backends. The user experiences zero friction while all the heavy lifting happens in a server farm in Paris or California.
Think about what that implies for the global art community, though. If the front-end tools are universally accessible, but the back-end infrastructure is deeply tied to regional sovereignty, does the physical location of the server eventually dictate the flavor of the art?
It fundamentally has to. I mean, think about it. If an illustrator in Brazil logs into a cloud tool powered by a European sovereign model, the structural assumptions of that model will subtly steer their composition.
These are the training data.
Yes. The default color grading, the spatial relationships between subjects, the handling of light and shadow, they all carry the DNA of the host region's training data. We are going to see generative art develop distinct regional flavors.
That is wild.
A piece generated on a European stack will feel texturally different from one generated on an Asian stack, simply because the underlying latent space maps the world differently.
So the server farm itself becomes a defining characteristic of the medium.
It really does.
But you know, when we talk about generative art, we always default to these massive language models and diffusion pipelines. But the stack today highlights that not all generative art requires a supercomputer or a complex wiring diagram of comfy UI nodes.
Right. There are other ways to be generative.
Exactly. Sometimes generative thinking is just about extracting the hidden patterns from the physical chaos already happening around us.
We are moving from latent space into physical space. The concept of using raw data as the new paint. There are two phenomenal projects in our sources today that operate entirely outside of the traditional AI umbrella. The first is a project on Hacker News titled I Gave Every Train in New York an Instrument.
I loved this one.
And the second is the Puddings Interactive Happy Map.
Let's talk about the New York subway project first, because it is just mesmerizing. The creator tapped into the live, real-time API from the MTA.
The Transit Authority.
Right. So this is the raw transit data tracking the exact location, the speed, and the status of every single train in the city. And they assigned a distinct musical instrument to every train line.
The translation of spatial data into temporal audio is just brilliant.
It is.
As a train accelerates or stops at a station or gets held up in a tunnel, that raw data is continuously converted into MIDI notes.
So, like, the A train might be laying down this steady walking upright bass line.
Yeah.
But then the 6 train, which is making all those rapid local stops, triggers a frantic snare drum pattern. And if there's a massive delay on the L train, it might translate into a long, dissonant saxophone drone.
And because the subway system is a chaotic living organism, the music never repeats.
Ever.
It is infinitely generating live jazz.
It's so cool. And then the Puddings Happy Map applies a really similar philosophy, but to visual storytelling.
Right. They scraped massive quantities of geotagged public language across different cities.
Just public posts, social media, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And by running sentiment analysis on that language, they mapped out the literal geographic hotspots of positivity and joy in an urban landscape.
These artists are using a massive public transit system as their orchestra, or an entire city's conversation as their canvas. This completely bypasses prompting a machine to mimic a human painting.
It's entirely different.
It is giving a melody and a color to the actual rhythms of human life. It is generative art, yes, but it is deeply anchored in our shared physical reality.
It represents a beautiful synthesis. It utilizes modern computation to manage scale. I mean, a single human couldn't manually track the velocity of every train in Manhattan simultaneously.
Definitely not.
But the resulting art is a direct, unfiltered reflection of human activity. It captures the rush hours, the delays, the spontaneous moments of joy.
It captures the scuff marks on the floorboards.
Yes, exactly. Back to the house analogy.
It finds the imperfections in the schedule and makes music out of them. And that pursuit of human imperfection brings us to our final source.
The pushback.
The pushback. After exploring complex node pipelines, sovereign server farms, and massive transit APIs, we have to look at the deliberate, stubborn choice to reject all of those layers entirely.
The craft counter movement.
Yes. Creative Block published a piece outlining the best non-AI digital art apps of 2026. And it highlights a massive segment of the artistic community that is doubling down on traditional digital tools like Procreate and ArtRage.
The headline here is The Proud Refusal of Convenience.
Yep.
In an era where Comfy UI can generate a photorealistic cinematic shot in seconds, these apps are aggressively advertising the fact that they will not do the work for you.
It's a feature, not a bug.
Exactly. They provide a blank digital canvas, simulated brushes, and zero generative intervention.
The psychology behind this movement is fascinating to me. Applications like ArtRage are thriving specifically because they preserve the physical and cognitive friction of creation.
The friction is the point.
Right. When you use those tools, the digital paint has a simulated viscosity. It smears and blends like real oil paint on canvas. The software mimics the physics of the medium, but it absolutely refuses to execute the vision.
Yeah.
You still have to understand color theory, perspective, and brush technique.
But let me play genuine devil's advocate here for a second.
Okay.
With generative tools becoming incredibly sophisticated, is retreating to a non-AI app just Luddite nostalgia? Are people just being romantic about the struggle?
That's a fair question.
Or is there a tangible difference in the final product when an artist forces themselves to make every single brush stroke manually?
I think it is entirely about the final product. When you force an artist to execute every stroke, you are forcing them to make thousands of micro decisions.
Mm.
Like, how hard do I press the stylus right here? Should this line be hesitant or confident? What if I drag this shadow a millimeter too far?
It's the micro decisions.
Those micro decisions and the inevitable micro mistakes that follow, they compound to create the idiomatic design we discussed at the very beginning of the deep dive. The friction ensures that the artist's unique neurobiology is translated onto the canvas. A machine just cannot replicate the specific tired hand tremor of an illustrator working at 2 a.m.
It can average it, but it can't invent that specific tremor.
Exactly. So we're looking at this incredibly wide, vibrant spectrum of creation in 2026. On one extreme, we have the immense power of Comfy UI, requiring a software engineering mindset to build node pipelines, but carrying the risk of a homogenized generic aesthetic.
And we have the underlying geopolitical infrastructure determining the cultural bias of those models.
Right. Moving to the middle, we have data-driven generative storytelling. Projects like the Subway Jazz using algorithms to translate massive amounts of human chaos into emergent music and maps.
And then on the far end, we have this fierce craft revival, a sanctuary of friction where artists intentionally reject the AI layer to preserve the agonizing, beautiful process of making things by hand.
It is a profound time to be a creator because the tools you choose to use or refuse to use make a definitive statement about your philosophy of art.
Absolutely.
Which leaves us with a completely new question to ponder as we wrap up today. As workflows like Comfy UI and Procreate diverge so drastically,
mm-hmm.
will we soon see digital art divided into strict genres based entirely on their workflow?
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
Right. Just like we categorize music as acoustic or electronic, will the defining characteristic of the next great art movement be the specific technology the artist intentionally refused to use? Will you walk into a digital gallery and ask, hey, is this an acoustic painting or an engineered generation?
It reframes the entire value of art around the presence or the deliberate absence of the machine.
It really makes you wonder how we will value those intentional scuff marks going forward. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We highly encourage you to look at the digital world around you today, every interface, every image, every design, with a slightly more critical eye. Look for the friction. We'll catch you next time.